Moncrief on News Talk.
And we have come to that time of the week that we all wait for, our parenting expert slot with Joanna Fortune. Hello, Dr. Joanna Fortune.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm the best. I'm doing great. We have lots of questions for you, so I'll get straight into it. I'm going to start with this one. We are leaving our kids with a babysitter for the first time this weekend. I can't help stressing about it, even though she's a capable young lady. My kids are 3 and 4, and I'm nervous that they'll act up or cry when she arrives, especially when I haven't left them with somebody they don't know before. How do I prepare them?
I think the first thing with this, and I think this one is so relatable for any parent who's ever had to leave their children with someone for the first time, is that when you talk about preparing your children, the best thing you'll do is prepare yourself. And I don't say that in a twee way, start with yourself, you know, always go there. But you're nervous because this is a big deal. Leaving your children with anybody, and particularly somebody new for the first time, is a big deal. But, and it's a big but, you have to show a calm and excited expression to the kids about this so they don't pick up on the worry. Because if we're nervous around our kids or we're anxious, anxiously anticipating something, they soak up that emotional resonance and they go, oh, something's afoot here. Something's up. I need to be on edge. And then, of course, they can't articulate that. So they use their behavior to let us know, I see you, I hear you, I'm struggling too. So you want to reframe this as something exciting, something positive. I'm also wondering, and I hope it's not too late when you hear the answer to this, but can you have this girl call over for a short play in your house while you're still there as a kind of meet and greet ahead of leaving them with her? Because I think this is extra loaded by the idea that she will be a stranger on the night or on the day, whenever it is that you're leaving. So if you could have her pop in like a short burst of time and just sit and play, let them see her so that they're excited for her to come back. And it also, I think, you know, depends on the time you're going out. You know, if it's before their bedtime, if it's going to be that, you know, the babysitter arrives early, but while you're out, it will be bedtime, I would say do this person a favor. Have your kids mostly ready for bed, you know, in their jammies, you know, bath, teeth brushed, whatever it might be, and select a storybook and a game for the babysitter to play with them and then read to them just before bed. So you make that transition as consistent as it can be, as if you were there. So it's their familiar book, but also you're kind of short-circuiting that they might run riot on her and say, oh, you know, mom, a four-year-old to be well able for this, you know, my mom and dad read us 5 books before bed. So you're being really clear about the routine and what is expected. And I just think that the first time, no matter what I say right now, Stephanie, the first time is going to be, you know, anxiety provoking. It's going to elicit some nervousness in you. But also trust the fact that you're not leaving them with someone random. You're saying this is a very capable young lady. You've clearly met her. You're happy with the fact that you're leaving your children. You're happy to leave them with her. So I think you've got to trust that instinct as well. The first time you leave your children with a babysitter shouldn't be for a very long time. You know, it shouldn't be hours and hours and hours. And if it's going to be an extended time, you would definitely need to do a little bit of prep work building up the relationship ahead of time. But really just trust your instinct and this will go okay. I imagine these two kids would be so excited to have this new fun babysitter in the house that they'll be delighted to have them there. But if you've got tears, if you've got that emotional reaction when you're going, you want to be really reassuring, come down and say, I'm going to give you a good night. I'm going to stuff your pockets full of kisses, or I'm going to put loads of kisses in your hand so you have them when you're gone. I've put kisses under your pillow, whatever it is for your little ones that's going to help them go, well, I've got a kiss from my mom and dad under my pillow. I can pull that out when I need it and we will be back. And it's really important that we say goodbye to our children and that we tell them we will be back.
Rather than
that's
just
very reassuring.
Rather than just slipping away and disappearing. I can imagine this parent will just be checking her phone for the entire time that she's
so
away.
Can I? That's what I'm like, I hope it's not something really special you're going out for because you're going to be on edge just the first time, you know, really.
Well, I don't know. I'm still on edge. Anyway, we'll move on to the next question. My 14-year-old daughter has been booked onto a school trip to France. She was very keen at the start and we have paid up, but now she's starting to express anxiety about it. I don't know if something has happened in her friendship group to make her more worried or if she's thinking she'll be homesick, but I think it would be really good for her to go. Should I put my foot down? I've tried to be encouraging, but maybe it's time to be more direct.
Oh, I don't know about the foot down stuff because that just feels very short circuiting of the emotional experience that's going on. You know, we use a word in my house to describe situations that are fun and you are excited about, but you're also nervous and a bit fearful about, and we call it skited. You're scared excited. And it's been really helpful word in our house. So if we're coming up to something new, my little one can say, you know, I'm feeling a bit skited about this. And it helps us to normalize, you know, we're still excited, but the nervousness is a normal part of that. I feel like your 14-year-old is skited. And she might be a bit old now for you to be approaching it with that word. But if you hold that word in mind, I think if you try acknowledging how excitement can activate fear, because this is a big deal. It's her first time going on a trip, I imagine, for a few days away from you. You know, she's not going to just be able to, it's not like she's going to Connemara for a couple of nights and worst case scenario, you could come and get her in the middle of the night. Once she goes, she's gone until she comes back. And it's this big separation. And for many of our teenagers around 14, it might be the first time they've had a significant separation from us. I'm also doing the maths on this, Stephanie, you know, like with COVID and the age this kid is now and would have been during COVID, separations probably were few and far between in terms of sleepovers or nights away with grandparents, things like that, that children normally have in a build up to a big school trip away. So I think if you approach it with sort of empathy and acceptance, and you say to her instead, I would never have agreed to you going on this trip if I thought you weren't ready. You are absolutely ready to do this. And you come at it. So you're being gentle yet firm rather than putting the foot down, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. I think if you let her know as well, no, not in that kind of, and we can slip into this, us parents, very, very easily, not in a preachy, look, I've paid for it and you're going, that's the end of it. But let her know the trip is booked, it's paid for, because you all know how much fun it's going to be. And that's why you booked it. It's why she wanted to go. And that remains true. I wouldn't jump on something has happened in the friendship group unless you've got more evidence. I actually think this is quite a normal degree of anxious anticipation about something completely new as an experience for her. I think if she remains bubbling in this anxiety, I probably would have a quiet word with whatever teacher is going on the trip. I imagine it's teachers, plural, but whichever one you feel, you know, she has a closest connection to, and say, look, she's a little anxious. She's worried about getting homesick, while appreciating, by the way, that teacher is going to have their hands full with a big group going to France. Ask them if they can check in with her or just keep an eye on her if she seems to be struggling during the trip.
I remember my first school trip and I completely relate to how this child is feeling.
Yeah, no, I think it's very relatable. You know, yeah. The first time away for a few days from home is a huge big deal. So don't minimize that for her. You know, it's more about acknowledging it, but reframing it in, you're ready, I know you are, and trying to present it in that way. But don't overstress it either.
This is an interesting question. I have found out that I'm having a baby boy, and it might sound stupid, but I found myself worrying about it a lot more than if I was having a girl. I come from a family of girls, and I feel out of my depth about parenting a boy. Everyone said it was likely that I'd have a girl because none of them can picture me having a son, and I was really excited to mummy a little girl and pick out dresses and dolls and all that. I'm grateful to be pregnant, of course, but to be honest with myself, I feel like I shouldn't be having this worry, stress and sadness about our new baby.
Oh, my heart goes out to this person so much, because, I mean, gender disappointment, it's actually not unusual. It really isn't. But it's also rarely about the child. It's more about our specific fantasies and wishes about how we imagine or envision our journey as a parent. So in sort of the psychology of pregnancy, we would always look at how there is an imagined baby long before there's a real baby. And it's, you know, when you're pregnant, you might be imagining who your baby will look like, how they'll be, what you'll do with them, the adventures you'll have. You'll imagine where will they go to school. You'll probably be stressing over where they'll go to childcare. The baby exists long before it actually exists. And that's our fantasy baby. And part of the journey into parenthood is that we let go of that fantasy baby when the real baby comes and we embrace the real baby in front of us, ideally when everything goes to plan. But gender disappointment in this regard is more about your fantasy of what your first time motherhood was going to look and feel like than anything to do with this baby. And there's lots of reasons that gender disappointment emerges in people. It can be anything, including, say, something like family or cultural pressures to have a girl or have a boy, depending on what it is. A desire we might have either to replicate our own parent-child relationship or to not replicate our own parent-child relationship. That can influence gender disappointment. It can come from a worry about our ability to connect with or relate to one gender over another. And I think that sounds like what's happening here. You're from a family of girls. People have, I mean, bizarrely and without any scientific basis, let's be honest, told you, I can't picture you having a girl, therefore, or having a boy, therefore this must be a girl. There's nothing in that other than their fantasy for you as well. And I just think, like, one of the things that we look at with gender disappointment, and at once upon a time in my career, I worked quite a lot with perinatal psychotherapy, and I had many conversations with people around this, is people tend to feel a lot of shame about gender disappointment. But the important thing is, don't bottle it up. I'm really glad, for example, this parent could write this letter in to us and say, look, I'm sitting with this and I don't want to sit with it and I'm worried about it, because that's a step in opening it up. Don't bottle it up. You're going to love your baby. You're not alone in these feelings. And these feelings do not make you a bad mother. That's really important to say. What I would say is, talk to a perinatal psychologist, psychotherapist, if this continues or if it escalates to an anxiety about having a boy. I think that's, be aware that's an option for you in your maternity hospital, and do pursue that. But there's something else in this letter, Stephanie, that just, it's just jarring with me. So I just want to kind of name it, and not just for this parent, but for any of us in terms of how we think about this. But it tends to come up quite a bit around gender disappointment, is just a word of caution, I guess, against engaging in gender essentialism. And gender essentialism is really where our belief for a specific gender child is grounded in what are nothing more than stereotypes rather than culture, okay?
Do you mean the dresses and dolls?
Exactly that. So, for example, like, I thought I'd have a girl and we'd have dresses and dolls. And I can't imagine having a boy because I'm associating, I don't know, with playing football and messing, you know, outside, and I don't see myself doing so-called boy things. That's what we'd really call gender essentialism. And you're falling into stereotypes, which again, may not, I mean, plenty of people have had a child of whatever gender and they have been their own little person, which is ultimately what we want for our children, regardless of their gender, is that they come out and they are who they are. And you go, oh, I didn't imagine it quite like this. Welcome to parenting. None of us can imagine it as it's going to be. So try not to fall into, I'm from a girl house, I can only have a girl house. You are well equipped to do this. But I just think you've started opening up with a conversation. I would like you to continue it. Talk to people in your circle, people who you have a safe, trusted connection with. And if you feel, no, I'd be a bit uncomfortable, or if you find people, albeit well-meaning, rush to minimize or dismiss, don't be silly. That will, look, I put that out of your head. You know, people mean well, but when you minimize or dismiss somebody's worries, you don't help them. You simply communicate, don't bring your worry to me. If you're feeling that you'd like a very kind of protected space to emotionally exhale your very valid fears and worries, then I would suggest you link in with perinatal psychology services in your maternity hospital.
This question is quite a big one. My son doesn't want to have a relationship with his biological father. He's 11 and I split up with his dad when he was very young, and I am his primary carer. While his dad and grandparents make a decent effort at trying to keep in touch, he has no interest in spending time with them or the cards they send or anything. He hasn't seen them in years and does not want to. His grandparents particularly have expressed to me that they miss him. They want to see him, but he doesn't feel any connection with them. Should I try to encourage him to see them?
Look, I think there's layers to this one, but I also think fundamentally a relationship between a child and their parent and a child and their grandparents should always be encouraged, unless there is a very specific safety reason not to do so. I want to put that caveat in, but there's nothing of that intimated in here. So I think it should be encouraged. I also think, however, in separated families, mutual respect and effort to relate with each other as the adults in that family should also be encouraged, because it shows our children that we can all get along and that we are a united family circle for them. So I don't know how this parent's relationship is with the grandparents and the ex-partner. I'm also not sure why he doesn't want this connection, because it seems like a very abrupt and, you know, certain decision this kid has meant. I don't want a connection. Not, yeah, I could take it or leave it. That's something else. But to be so certain, I'm wondering why he doesn't want it. I'm wondering what happened at the point that he disengaged with them. And I have to say, Stephanie, I'm factoring COVID in here with this, because this is an 11-year-old child. And there would have been that COVID period when he probably couldn't see his dad, his grandparents because they wouldn't have been in his bubble, let's say, going back to all of that language. But it may be that that break in connection has been quite challenging for him to repair from or to reconnect from, if that makes sense. He wouldn't be alone in that. This is not a unique situation from what I hear in work. I'm wondering if any of that's resonating with this parent. Could you host, oh, look, you could host a lunch, but if that sounds torturous for you, and you might be going, oh God, no, I don't want a lunch. That's going to go on hours. It would be too intense. Maybe just have everyone over for tea and a cake, tea and a bun, in your home, because it's his space. It's his familiar environment with his dad, with grandparents. And tell your son openly, look, I'm having your dad and your grandparents over for tea and cake. And, you know, I want you there and I want you to be polite and friendly because it's really important that you have a relationship and I want to help you with that. So you're letting him know that you're supporting him. But there are some other questions around that. And I'm also just aware that I don't want it falling on an 11-year-old child that mm-hmm. he has to make all these efforts. Now, I do hear grandparents have reached out, they're sending cards. But I'm wondering, is it possible for dad to find out what this kid's interested in? You know, if it's sports, if it's gaming, if it's Lego, you know, whatever it is that is his thing.
And try to meet him there.
Exactly that, you know, like if it's Lego, going to one of those Brictionary or, you know, those brick shows that go on. If it's gaming, going to something or saying, look, I'm coming over, I've got a spare headset and a device with me and we're going to play that game I know you love. Letting him know I'm aware of you, even if I'm not seeing you and I want to connect with you. I think find what interests him, if it's football or if it's whatever sport it might be, take him to a game, get tickets. I think find a way to reach this kid at his level rather than saying, go see your dad, go see your grandparents. I think that's too much on an 11-year-old child.
Thank you so much, Dr. Joanna Fortune, psychotherapist. As ever, more questions than we have time to answer. But if you have questions for Joanna, you can get them into us. You can WhatsApp us on 087 1400 106 or email afternoon@newstalk.com.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.